Week 134 of Brad's Branded Thoughts, and from the Hawkeye of the Storm, our brand new platform for the podcast. And this is hard coming on here being 0-2. Iowa football falling to Northwestern 21-20 this past Saturday. Iowa had jumped out to a 17-0 lead in this game, in large part because of a couple very careless Northwestern turnovers. And, you know, we're going to go over some of these stats from both sides and talk about, as far as comparing these stats to last week, in other words, the Purdue game, because they found a different way to lose this week, which usually I'd be very, very concerned moving forward, which certainly I was concerned immediately following the game. And I don't know if it's because I'm a homer. I am a Hawkeye fan. I don't run away from that. I don't claim to be a news reporter anymore. But I look at the differences between week one for the Big Ten and week two, specifically as it relates to Iowa. And, yeah, Iowa found different ways to lose. If you look at week one, Iowa loses to Purdue 24-20, a very similar score to their 21-20 loss to Northwestern. But let's take a look at the stats from the Purdue game to start with. Of course, it was widely related how Iowa ran the ball effectively against Purdue. Mekhi Sargent, Ivory Kelly Martin, Tyler Goodson all averaged a healthy number of yards per carry. And as a team, Iowa ran the ball 36 times. That's a healthy number, okay? They ran the ball 36 times. They did throw 39 times, but I still think those are winning numbers. But again, 36 carries, an average of 5.4 per rush, 195 yards on the ground. You look at Ivory Kelly Martin, he ran the ball 4 times for 29 yards, an average of 7.3 a carry. Mekhi Sargent, 11 carries for 71 yards, an average of 6.5 a carry. And Tyler Goodson, 16 carries for 77 yards, an average of 4.8 per carry. Amir Smith-Marset also took a couple end-arounds, two carries for 18 yards. But I look at these numbers, and I think, okay, Iowa's defense couldn't stop the run in the second half. Horvath or whatever the guy's name was for Purdue, the big guy, just basically ran over Iowa's defenders, and it looked like Iowa got tired. And then I look at this past Saturday, Isaiah Bowser, a running back who hurt Iowa 2 years ago in Kinnick Stadium, and I was concerned heading into this game mainly because of Northwestern's rushing attack. I thought, well, Isaiah Bowser came out of nowhere 2 years ago. He's 2 years older. He's comfortable here. There's no fans. This is playing right into their hands. And if you look at the numbers, Northwestern really didn't run the ball very well on Saturday. I mean, there were spurts where they were really gouging Iowa. But I think the big thing is how many times they ran the football. The volume, the sheer volume, that was hard to sit and watch as an Iowa fan. If you look at the total number of carries for Northwestern, they ran the ball 60 times. Now, not 16, 60 times. Now, they only averaged 2.4 per rush. Now, that also includes sacks in college, but 2.4 a rush, that is a winning number. So Iowa didn't do terrible against the run. They got Seth Benson back at linebacker. I thought Seth played very well. I think they are missing Jack Campbell. I think depth at linebacker is a position where we're seeing some problems. We've seen that from a run stoppage standpoint in the second half against Purdue. I thought the first half against Northwestern, specifically the second and third quarters, well, that was when Northwestern climbed back into this ball game. And also with some miscommunication against David Bell for Purdue, which, of course, I don't want to blame Barrington Wade for that final touchdown because that may have been a missed assignment on the part of the down safety. But I just look at what's happened thus far these first two games, I think they need Campbell back. And maybe they'll get Campbell back in a week, but they're not going to get him back tomorrow. So what does Iowa need to do? Well, offensively, let's talk about offense. That's probably where Iowa's biggest jump needs to come, and I don't think any of us expected that. I think we looked, and that was why I was so excited about this season, and I think many of my comrades, many of my friends felt the same way. When you look at Iowa's offense and what they had returning, I think all of us were pretty confident. The one caveat in all this was quarterback play. That was really the one big variable. They didn't lose anybody at receiver besides Oliver Martin, who didn't play more than, what, 5 to 10 offensive snaps, maybe all of last year, maybe more than that. But very inconsequential loss. They lost Torin Young, but returned a guy who redshirted last year, who, in my opinion, is a lot better than Young, a different kind of runner, and Ivory Kelly Martin. And then they lost Nate Stanley, and that was the big thing. Of course, they lost some pieces on the line, but we were confident with Coy Kronk transferring in from Indiana. They lost Tristan Wirfs last year. That was a blow. But Kronk comes in, a guy who had started 4 years at Indiana, and I think we just thought this offense was going to become what we thought it all, what we thought it really could become last year. And some people thought Nate Stanley held this team back. I mean, his inability to consistently throw the deep ball, his sometimes sidearm style fastballs, sometimes he'd make decisions where he's throwing into coverage or throwing right to the opponent on certain plays, and you're wondering what he's seeing on the field. But Nate Stanley made good reads. I think we all underappreciate, and this is what's sad. This is what's sad about being an Iowa fan, and I think it's probably being a fan of probably any team that doesn't win championships every year, i.e. Clemson, Alabama, etc. Well, not really etc., basically just Alabama and Clemson. I think we underappreciated Nate Stanley. Let's talk about Spencer Petras' numbers from Saturday. 26 of 50. 26 of 50 for 216 yards, an average of 4.3 per pass, which is not good. I think you probably know that without me having to tell you that. One touchdown, three picks, a QBR of 52.2. On the ground, we talked about Northwestern, what they did. They ran the ball 60 times. Iowa ran the ball 23 times. So, again, to recap this, a Kirk Ferentz-led offense with a first-year quarterback that didn't have a spring practice, a first-year starting quarterback that didn't get a spring practice, in his second game out, his first game at home against a team Iowa historically struggles with, made him throw the ball 50 times. And with three former starters, all three of these running backs have started at one time or another. Three starters, Iowa runs the ball just 23 times, nearly tripled by Northwestern. Northwestern, who, by the way, doesn't really have any stud at running back. Isaiah Bowser, okay, he's good, but he ran the ball 25 times for 85 yards. Brown was the next guy that ran. He had 10 carries for 21 yards. They don't have the horses Iowa has at running back. And yet, Iowa's tailbacks just got the ball out of the backfield 23 times for an average of 3.3 per rush. Everybody's talking. That's another thing, and I don't want to go on all these tangents, but I probably will. I don't understand why so many people are talking about, oh, Iowa's run game just disappeared. Why is this a story year after year, how the run game disappears? Let me tell you something. Northwestern went into and Kirk Ferentz admitted this afterwards. Northwestern went into this game with the game plan of stopping the run. They went into the game with the game plan of stopping the run. Now, the excuse that we heard afterwards from the coaching staff, specifically Kirk Ferentz, was, well, we threw the ball that many times because Northwestern takes away the run. Well, actually, I think that was Spencer Petras that said that after the game. But they take away the run, so that's why we threw so many times. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but Wisconsin, you're not going to see Wisconsin with Graham Mertz, although they can't seem to get out on the field due to COVID. You're not going to see Graham Mertz throw the ball 50 times. Let's look at what Graham Mertz did against Illinois. Because if there's any team in the Big Ten that historically you'd look at and say, if you're going to beat them, you really need to stop the run. It would be Wisconsin. If you stop the run against Wisconsin, they're basically done. Okay? They don't produce first, second, third, even fourth round quarterbacks. I think the best quarterback that's been through there was Russell Wilson, and that was almost a mirage as he transferred from North Carolina State. Was absolutely amazing, and of course is the lady candidate for MVP this year. But when's the last time they've had another Russell Wilson? I mean, Jack Cohn's not going to be an NFL caliber player. Scott Tolzien never really did anything in the NFL, although he was a backup for some time in Green Bay. But if you look at Wisconsin's numbers against Illinois, and I get this was the first game, and we're talking about the Northwestern game, which was the second game for Iowa. But look at what Wisconsin's game plan was for week one. They put up 45 points. These are their numbers. Graham Mertz threw the ball 21 times. Now, he was 20 of 21, so he's very good. But notice they didn't throw the ball 40 times because he was hitting them all. They threw the ball 21 times and ran the ball 54 times. And you may say, well, Corey, they ran the ball more effectively in those runs, so that's why they kept feeding the running backs. No. They averaged 3.4 per rush. 3.4. At home against Illinois. The reason they ran the ball 54 times is because Wisconsin has an identity. That's why. They have an identity. And Iowa does not. That's very clear. We historically have thought, for some reason, under Kirk Ferentz's direction, that Iowa's identity is run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, and stop the run. Well, they got the stop the run part right. Iowa usually is very good against the run. But Iowa's identity over the years has not been run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. They may try to run the ball, but historically, if you look at the numbers since 1999, really, when Kirk Ferentz first came here as the head coach, they have not exceeded at running the ball more than maybe two or three times. They are not Wisconsin. The identity of a Kirk Ferentz-led team is stopping the run and limiting big plays. That's an Iowa identity. The problem here is that Kirk Ferentz, and it's not just the media, it's not just fans that tout this run the ball, that style of play. Kirk Ferentz has touted the importance of being able to run the football throughout his entire time here at Iowa. So it's not us as media people or as fans making this stuff up. He has touted this for years. But the problem is they don't do it successfully. And now they have a situation where you have a first-year quarterback without a spring practice, a guy who's not playing well. Spencer Petras is not playing well right now, okay? He's not playing well. And you've got three studs at running back. You've got a future draft pick tackle on the left. You've got a future first-round draft pick at the center position. You've got a flock of guys who can rotate at guard. And Coy Kronk, who I think struggled Saturday. I mean, if you look at the tape, he struggled. But Mark Hallenberg came and played pretty well. The right tackle position, I'm a bit concerned about. But overall, this is still a very viable offensive line. And again, three stud running backs and a first-year starting quarterback. And yet, they ran the ball 23 times and threw the ball 50 times. That is unacceptable. That's unacceptable. I'm a big Kirk Ferentz fan, but I'm not going to sugarcoat that. This is that sort of behavior from a play calling standpoint is unacceptable. And you can say, well, that's Brian Ferentz's fault. Okay, but Kirk Ferentz is the guy who's ultimately making these calls. Maybe not from play to play, but I guarantee you, if Kirk Ferentz wanted to go in that offensive locker room at halftime and say, look, Brian, we're not doing this anymore. This is ridiculous. We're not going to continue to run the football this many times. Now, Kirk did say a number of these throws were in the two-minute offense. Okay, even if 15 of these throws were in the two-minute offense, I think 35 throws is too many throws. Graham Mertz threw the ball 21 times. Iowa was not down in this game. They did not trail in this game until the end, 21-20. Iowa was ahead this whole game. It went what's confusing and baffling about this is that coaching went completely contrary to what you would think they would do. And it's just one, it's one game. I get it. I'm not going to overreact on this. It's a very small sample size. But if you take this game and many of Iowa's games in past seasons into account, and you look at them as a whole, it's almost like Ferentz is doing the opposite of what we all think he should do year after year. And yes, I get it. He knows more about football than we do. But it seems like when Iowa doesn't have the horses at running back, their offensive line is struggling like last year, especially in the interior. When they're struggling on the line and they don't have consistent running back play, and they got some last year with Goodson, Sargent, and Young, but even in past years, they've just been okay at running back. They still pound the ball, pound the ball, pound the ball. Look at what happened with Akram Wadley. I can't tell you how many times I yelled at the TV because they're feeding Akram the rock up the middle of the field between the tackles. I mean, I don't. And then yesterday, or this past Saturday, they have a tremendous group of running backs and a pretty good offensive line from what I've seen. I think that the offensive line has played better than people think so far. And now they decide to go pass heavy. I mean, wouldn't you go pass heavy with a third-year starting quarterback, a fourth-year guy in Nate Stanley last year, instead of a first-year starting quarterback this year, again, without a spring, and a really broken-up fall camp? I don't get it. I don't understand that at all. Wisconsin doesn't even have the horses at running back anymore. I mean, their best running back is probably Groschek. I mean, look at their numbers from the Illinois game. At running back, Garrett Groschek, 13 carries for 70 yards. Watson ran the ball 19 times for 62 yards. Guerrero ran the ball 11 times for 36 yards. So, I mean, those are okay. But the point is, the score was 45-7. And I get it. Northwestern's a better team than Illinois. There's no question about that. And I think Northwestern's got a real chance at winning this division this year. Real chance. We don't even know if Wisconsin's going to be eligible, because right now they've only got 6 games on the schedule. They canceled their game for tomorrow. They canceled their game last week. They've only got 5 games left on the schedule, and they've got to play 6 games to qualify for the Big Ten championship game. So I would say Northwestern is right there, and Purdue's got a chance too. If they get Rondell Moore back at full strength, boy, I mean, seriously, Purdue didn't look great this past Saturday, but they can get Moore back and just be okay. I mean, they've already played Iowa, and of course Iowa, at least I thought Iowa was going to be a major contender in the West. They've got the tiebreaker against Iowa. You've got Minnesota, who's 0-2. Iowa's 0-2. Wisconsin's got COVID issues. And Nebraska just got sledgehammered by Ohio State 2 weeks ago. I don't even know. I guess they had their game canceled. Yeah, because they were supposed to play Wisconsin this past week. So they're down a game. So I'm confused at the game plan. And Kirk Ferentz did say afterwards, look, we can't throw the ball that many times. That's not winning football. What I don't understand is, okay, you say we can't throw the football that many times, but yet you threw the football that many times. Or excuse me, ran the football that many times. You ran the football. I think they should. If they could have run 50 times, I'd have been thrilled. I think the misnomer here is, well, you're never happy. You're not happy when Kirk runs too much, and you're not happy when he throws too much. The key here is balance. Isn't that what this Iowa program is supposed to be prided on, is balance? And they've got no balance. It's one or the other. Fans can be upset when Ferentz runs the ball 60 times for an average of 2.8 a carry. That's a problem. It's also a problem when they throw the ball 50 times and 3 of those throws are interceptions and they average 4 yards per catch. That's a problem. And I you know, again, it's just one game, and maybe Ferentz was just looking at this in hindsight. I mean, he reacted to this pretty quickly after the game and said, we can't throw the ball that many times. I would have thought that had been more of a Sunday film realization, like, wow, we threw the ball 51 times. That's too many times. 50 or 51, I don't... I know that... It says there's a team throw. I don't know who that would have been. But the box score says Petras threw 50 times, so we'll stick with that. But Iowa better figure out its identity. We got, you know, Michigan State tomorrow. We're going to talk about Michigan State here in a moment. This is a This is not the Michigan State team we saw 2 weeks ago. They turned the ball over 7 times and lost to Rutgers. They just went on the road. Rocky Lombardi, the Des Moines native, connected on several deep balls, really hurt Michigan, and their defense actually played pretty well. Upset Wolverines, in-state rivalry at the Big House. This is a scary game, and it's a scary game. The main reason why it's a scary game is because Iowa's 0-2 in danger of going to 0-3. And I said last week that this game against Northwestern this past weekend was a must-win. And I stick by that. It was a must-win if Iowa's at all interested in a viable path to the championship game. It is still possible, and here comes my homer instinct, it is still possible for Iowa to win the West. People are, you know, saying that that's a foolish thought. This is a crazy year, okay? We all know that. We've seen what's happened with Wisconsin. We see that Purdue and Northwestern are 2-0, Minnesota's 0-2. This is a winnable game tomorrow. The following weekend is winnable. Minnesota doesn't look good. Penn State looks more winnable now. They lose to Indiana and Ohio State back-to-back. Nebraska is obviously a very winnable game. I'm not saying they're going to win all these games. Illinois is a very winnable game. So Iowa is in a position where if you get hot, you can still win the division. And who knows? I mean, who knows what's going to happen with Wisconsin? Of course, that's the final game of the year, but it is at Kinnick. I was really, really caught up in my own fandom on Saturday, and I probably overreacted. I think a lot of fans overreacted, just monitoring. I listened to Sound Off on WHO 1040 after the game. Fans were panicked, and that's usually what Sound Off is. It's a panic sesh, if you will. But I look at this and I say, look, they're 0-2, but they've got winnable games in the schedule. If Iowa could get on a roll, I think you could win this division at 6-2. I mean, I don't know why you couldn't. I'm not saying they're going to go 6-2. I'm just saying it is still possible. But this game Saturday, if last game was a must win, this game is absolutely a must win. I think if you lose these first three games, which were... That's the thing. If you lose all three of these first three games that were all winnable games, Northwestern, Purdue, and Michigan State, I don't know mentally where this team's going to be at. We know the distractions with the lawsuit that was presumably going to occur against the Iowa football program from 8 former black players. If you haven't heard about that, listen to our Week 132 show with a former Iowa linebacker, Edmund Miles. I'm not saying that's a distraction now, but you just wonder where the heads of these kids are if Iowa falls to 0-2. We know that Saturday night late, we got bad news from... Actually, we got the news Sunday morning from Iowa wide receiver Amir Smith-Marset. He was picked up for going 74 and a 30 on Riverside Drive in Iowa City and had a blood alcohol content of over 0.01, which is, of course, over the league limit. So he was booked on OWI charges and suspended for the Michigan State game. That does not look good. I mean, I know that's an obvious statement. I'm not here just to state the obvious, but that is not a good look when one of your senior wide receivers and probably Iowa's most dynamic player, their most dynamic playmaker overall, I think Tyler Goodson would maybe stake a claim to that as well, but that does not look good when he goes out at 0-2 and drinks, drives, gets picked up for 44 over, and gets suspended. That's just not good. Now, Kirk Ferentz, on his Wednesday night show with Gary Dolphin on the radio, did say that Amir is in good standing now. He's practicing with the scout team and is expected to play against Minnesota. I hope that's true. I hope he learned from it. It's frustrating when it happens to anybody, but especially a senior leader, and Kirk has had nothing but good things to say about Amir. Some people were saying how they were surprised Iowa didn't suspend Amir Smith-Marset for longer than one game. That's pretty much a given, that if you get picked up for OWI, you'll get suspended for a game. I don't think Kirk was ever going to increase that that suspension based on the fact that he was going so fast, although certainly it made it more dangerous. But I think he sort of had to go with a one-size-fits-all for this. I get it. It is what it is, because there's lots of variables that you could break down in each case for a student-athlete, and, you know, you might be accused of not being fair. I also don't think Kirk had any way, even if he did look at this and say, look, Amir, he needs to be suspended for a game and a half. If he wanted to do that, the problem, I think in any other year that would have been okay. The problem is with doing that, two things. A, again, we go back to the claim that, well, it should be a one-size-fits-all punishment, and that's not consistent with Kirk's previous punishments. I get that. I think the other thing is, too, given the racial claims this past summer, if this happens and there's already some question marks about, well, that's not a really consistent punishment if Kirk's punishing him for more than a game, suspending him, and then he does that for an African-American player, I don't think that looks good. I'm not saying Kirk thought about this. I'm not saying he even considered suspending Amir for more than a game, but I don't know that he could have. I know that sounds stupid. Maybe you don't think that's... I don't think he could have without getting some backlash. I mean, I think that could have been... That could have created some problems from the outside. I'm not saying he thought about it. And again, I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt to Amir, but it was a rough weekend. Let's just say that. Wisconsin, we mentioned they're still not playing. They're expected to play next week, we think. But again, if they don't, they're not qualified. They're not eligible for the Big Ten Championship game. So... I didn't think I'd be as excited for this game tomorrow against Michigan State as I am. And I don't know why I am. I think it's because we've been so deprived of Iowa football for the last 10 months. I mean, 11 months almost. We've been so deprived of Iowa football that I think it was just one of those things where I'm not going to turn the TV off. I mean, I'm not, you know. And I don't think this season's going down the drain. I thought that after the game on Saturday, but I want to, you know, Spencer. A lot of people are calling for Spencer Petras to be benched. I don't think that's appropriate at this point. I think Spencer, he's got a great arm. That's the big plus with him. Right now, he doesn't know how to rein it in. You know, every one of his passes. If you're a video games fan, every one of his passes is like passes that I throw on Madden when I'm playing Madden. You hold down the X button or the B button, and it's like a rocket everywhere you go, even when you're throwing the ball 40 yards down the field. That's what Petras' throws are. He doesn't know how to put any touch on his throws. We thought Nate Stanley didn't know how to put touch on his throws. So far, Petras is a little bit worse, maybe a lot worse. And we hope that's not going to be a trend, because I can't imagine that this was a problem in fall camp. I mean, right now, all his balls are and I can't remember the former quarterback that was commentating the game on Saturday for ESPN. All of his throws are high and hot. And people are calling for his job. I don't think it's time to go with Deuce. I don't think it's time to go with Padilla. We don't know what those guys have to offer. We know that Padilla had an offer from Georgia in his recruiting process, and we know that Deuce certainly garnered some attention on the recruiting front. But look, it's two games in. It's a weird season already. Ferentz is not going to switch to a backup right now. He's not going to switch to a backup after this game. I think if this continues past the Minnesota game, I mean, we saw it in 2008. Jake Christensen struggled and was replaced by Ricky Stanzi. Jake Rudock was replaced, but that was really at the beginning of the new year. He never really lost his job in 2014. So I would not anticipate that, fans. I think it's a little bit early to do that. Give Spencer some more time. I know it's hard because you look at this receiving core and you just think, good Lord, we are wasting a lot of talent that's going to be gone next year. Brandon Smith and Amir Smith-Marset are both seniors, and assuming they don't exercise their right to a fifth year of eligibility, they're not going to be here. So I get the frustrations, but I think if you're Iowa fans, you just got to just be patient. And Amir Smith-Marset didn't have a bad game. I mean, he had zero catches against Purdue the week prior, but he led the team in receptions this past Saturday. But it's going to be a blow not having him for this game against Michigan State. I mean, It does take away a threat. Kirk expressed that, you know, Tyrone Tracy's probably going to be the guy that fills in. He filled in admirably when Brandon Smith went down last year, so we know Tracy's capable, but he's not the speedster that Smith is, or Smith Marset is. He's not the physical specimen that Smith is. So, I mean, he's crafty. He's definitely got some athleticism, but he's not the player that Smith Marset is, so it is going to hurt Iowa's chances of victory on Saturday. Not saying they won't win, but that certainly did not help. Let's take a look before we head to our break and then come back and preview and make our picks for the week. Let's take a look at some of the other numbers that stood out on Saturday. One thing that stood out on a positive front is the lack of penalties from Iowa. Remember, Iowa had 100 penalty yards against Purdue week one. Just three penalties for 20 yards this past week. Northwestern had six penalties for 45 yards. The turnovers were a problem, but they did force three turnovers from Northwestern, a pick and two fumbles. Iowa had three picks. So, I mean, they improved in certain ways, but they've still got to clean up the turnovers. The disappointing thing is Iowa fumbled a couple times week one, and now they don't fumble, but they throw three picks. So, again, losing different ways is not a theme you want to see, but, again, a small sample size just two games in. I mean, I don't know where else to look on this. I mean, it was a pretty close game from a first down standpoint, 20-18 Iowa. I think Iowa did fumble the ball once and recovered it. Let's take a look at the box score. Torrey Taylor, by the way, Iowa's punter from Australia. He leads the Big Ten in punting average right now. He has been absolutely tremendous. Yeah, I mean, this almost makes me just sad to read. Tyler Goodson, 13 carries for 43 yards. I mean, average of 3.3 carry. Sargent, 4 carries for 20 yards. Nearly half of that was on one carry, but I mean, 5 yards a carry. I just don't know why they just abandoned the running game. It means it makes no sense at all. Amir Smith-Marset, 7 receptions, 84 yards. I think the offensive star right now, I'm just going to say it, Sam Laporta. I know he had a couple balls go off his hands on Saturday. I think of the last one that ended up in a pick. I don't blame Sam Laporta. Sam Laporta has tremendous hands. Those passes, if you've ever tried to catch a football, and of course I've never tried to catch a football from Spencer Petras, but those passes high and hot, especially with a guy who's going to hit you down low, those are tough. I mean, he had 6 great receptions on, you know, 6 throws that probably were not the easiest balls to catch. Right now, Petras is not throwing a catchable ball. But I think Laporta's looked very good. Brandon Smith has to do more. 3 receptions for 19 yards. Now, granted, again, I think Petras is missing guys. There was a play late in the game, I think, on the final drive where Nico Reganey was wide open down the field. And Petras basically rolled out, stared his receiver down, and ended up, I think, having to throw it away because the guy wasn't open. Just didn't look good. Terry Roberts playing very well on special teams right now. It'd be nice to see him get a chance at corner. Julius Prince didn't get a whole lot of time on Saturday. We saw a lot more 4-3 against Northwestern than 4-2-5, which means we saw a whole lot more of, we saw some of Dane Belton, I think, in the cash. Kayvon Merriweather played a lot at strong safety. Kerner played free safety, and we saw a lot more of Hankins and Riley Moss at corner. I don't think Moss has played all that great. I think Hankins is playing his tail off right now. But I think Moss, there's some room for improvement there. And again, I think the linebackers played decently well. I thought the line played pretty well. Davion Nixon is the star of this team right now. He leads the country in tackles for loss as far as average per game. And Zach Van Valkenburg had a forced fumble and a fumble recovery all in the same play. So there are good things that are going on right now. Iowa's just got to figure out, I think the run game, I think you just got to give your guys the ball. I mean, that's as simple as it is right now. Give your guys the ball. If Iowa starts averaging 2 yards a carry, okay. And I don't think Coy Cronk played great. I get that. And maybe that's part of the reason why they went away from the run game a little bit more. But I mean, Petras had a guy in his grill every time, and it sure didn't look like he knew how to handle it. And you could blame Cronk for that, but also you think maybe some draw plays, some halfback delays, maybe would have been a better route to go. Quick slants, I think we've called that for years when pressure. And I don't think there was so much pressure that I think Petras for the most part, made throws that he chose to make. I don't think he was forced into too many throws that he didn't want to make. I just don't think he is throwing the ball well. I think it's as simple as that. So, room for improvement for Iowa. We will break down the Iowa-Michigan State game tomorrow and make our picks for Week 3 in the Big Ten, as well as our weekly NFL picks across the country, and we'll recap what happened in both the pros and collegiate ranks last week. We'll be back after this with more from Brad's Branded Thoughts. Are you a Hawkeye fan living in Story County? Do you feel isolated, like you're alone in a maze of red? Well, you're not the only one. And that's why we here at StoryCounty.news have launched a brand new section of our website, From the Hawkeye of the Storm, which will feature our weekly podcast, Brad's Branded Thoughts, as well as other Hawkeye-related content for all you Story County residents who bleed black and gold. Or if you live in Western Iowa, Eastern Iowa, or somewhere else other than Ames and you're a Hawkeye fan, we'd love your support. All of our content is free, so again, give our Facebook page a follow, give it a like, and give our Twitter page a follow as well, @FromTheHawkeye, @FromTheHawkeye on Twitter. The more likes, the more follows, the more support we get, the more content we can continue to push out, and it's all free. It's From the Hawkeye of the Storm, hosted by StoryCounty.news, for the best Hawkeye content in the area. We are back here, week 134 of Brad's Branded Thoughts. Let's talk about the NFL last week, run through some results, and then make our picks for Week 9 in the NFL season. COVID continues to pop up across the league, but games are happening. There haven't been too many postponements and no cancellations that I know of at this point. Thursday night football this past week, Falcons-Panthers, not yesterday, but the week prior. Falcons beat the Panthers 25-17, Bills over the Patriots. That was a fun game to watch. Josh Allen closes the door on Cam Newton and New England. The Bengals beat the Titans, the Raiders over the Browns, Colts over the Lions, Vikings over the Packers, Chiefs over the Jets, Dolphins over the Rams. Game of the week, the Steelers closing out the Ravens 28-24. Broncos over the Chargers, Saints over the Bears in overtime, Seahawks over the Niners, Eagles over the Cowboys, and Monday night it was the Buccaneers coming back to beat the New York Giants. We may see C.J. Beathard sooner rather than later. Jimmy Garoppolo went down again this past week with some sort of an ankle injury. I don't know if it's a high ankle sprain or what, but it sounds like he'll be out an extended period of time. The bad news is George Kittle also expected to be out 6 or 7 weeks at least. Nick Mullins played last night for Thursday Night Football, looked absolutely abysmal. And I don't know if it's a contractual issue, if it's a financial reason why San Francisco is playing Nick Mullins, maybe because his contract runs out after this year and they want to figure out what their future is at backup quarterback. But he looked bad and they never went to CJ. So I would expect maybe we'll see a change. If not, the 49ers, I mean, I don't know what to make of them. They've got a losing record right now. But let's make our picks for this week. We mentioned the Packers beat the 49ers last night, 34-17. Sunday at noon, Broncos and Falcons. I will take the Broncos there. Seahawks, Bills should be a great matchup. These two teams have combined 12-3. I'm going to go with the Seahawks. I think Russell Wilson right now clearly is the MVP for the season. I will take Seattle on the road. Bears and Titans, another good one. I'll take the Titans at home. Ravens and Colts. The Colts, a surprise team at 5-2. I'm going to go with the surprise there. I will go Indianapolis to win. Panthers and Chiefs. I've got to go with the Chiefs, despite the fact that it looks like Christian McCaffrey will be back this week for Carolina. The Lions and the Vikings. The Vikings with a surprise victory over the Green Bay Packers in a comeback win last week. I will go with the Lions, though, here. Giants and the Redskins. NFC East battle. What an atrocious division the NFC East is this year. I will go with the Giants. Texans and Jaguars. I'll go with the Texans. Raiders and Chargers. I'll go Chargers. Steelers, Cowboys. I got to go with the Steelers. Cowboys look bad again without now their top two quarterbacks, Andy Dalton and Dak Prescott. Dolphins, Cardinals. I like the Cardinals here, but this should be a fun one in the afternoon. Saints, Buccaneers, Sunday Night Football. It should be a fun one as well. I'll go with the Saints. Monday Night Football, it's the Patriots and the 0-8 Jets. Someone's got to win here, despite these two teams being a combined 2-13. I am going to go with Cam Newton and the Patriots. And if Cam Newton's going to have a good day on the fantasy front, boy, you'd think it'd be against New York. I mean, if he can't perform against New York, I think it may be time to play Jarrett Stidham, even though Stidham hasn't looked good when he's been in there. And, of course, I am interested in this because Cam Newton is my number one quarterback in both my fantasy leagues. So, but I will go with the Patriots there on Monday Night Football. College. Let's recap some college football from last week. Of course, we talked about Wisconsin having their game canceled against Purdue. Or no, actually, that's tomorrow. The game that was canceled last week was Wisconsin and Nebraska. So we're going to talk a little bit about other Big Ten games, as well as some notable games across the country. Iowa, of course, lost to Northwestern. We recapped that one 21-20. The big surprise, I think, of the Big Ten, no question about it, was Michigan State pulling off the victory against Michigan. I mean, I don't think anybody saw that coming, especially after the 7-turnover performance for Michigan State against Rutgers. That to me was the surprise of the week. I'm looking through the rest of the scores. I mean, certainly Minnesota losing to Maryland was a surprise. I just don't know if Minnesota is nearly as good as we thought. And so maybe that could compete for result of the week. Tua Tagovailoa's younger brother, is it Taulia Tagovailoa? He led Maryland to an incredible victory and a missed extra point for Minnesota in overtime, a 45-44 win over the Gophers. I don't know what to make of Minnesota at all at this point. I mean, Maryland lost to Northwestern a week ago, 43-3. So I don't know what to make of that. There was a top 25 game postponed. Maryland and Florida International was postponed. Boston College nearly beat the number one team in the country, and of course they're out without Trevor Lawrence going into the game tomorrow against Notre Dame, and they were without him last week. Boston College probably should have won that game, but boy, they find a way, Clemson does, to continue to rattle off wins even when they are ugly. They win 34-28 over the Eagles. Georgia, the number five team in the country, they beat Kentucky 14-3. Cincinnati beats Memphis. Kansas State, boy, number 16 team in the country, looked like they did against Arkansas State earlier in the year. They lose to West Virginia 37-10. Coastal Carolina shuts out Georgia State. Number 23, Iowa State over Kansas easily in that one. Purdue over Illinois in a close one, 31-24. Notre Dame, number 4 in the country, over Georgia Tech 31-13. Number 17, Indiana, looked pretty good against Rutgers. They're 2-0 now, 37-21. TCU over Auburn, 33-23. LSU falls to Auburn, 48-11. And boy, LSU looks bad, don't they? Defending national champions, and they are really, really poor, aren't they? Northwestern Iowa, we talked about that one. Texas, in overtime, takes down the number 6 Oklahoma State Cowboys. So the Big 12 gets even messier at the top. Ole Miss over Vanderbilt. Number 25 Boise State over Air Force. Number 2 Alabama shuts out Mississippi State, 41-0, just weeks after Nick Saban voiced concerns over his defense. They pitch a shutout against Mississippi State. Number 3, Ohio State over number 18, Penn State, who's now 0-2, 38-25. Number 8, Texas A&M over Arkansas. Number 10, Florida over Missouri. Number 22, SMU over Navy. Virginia upsets number 15, North Carolina, 44-41. Number 24, Oklahoma, they've gotten things figured out, 62-28 over Texas Tech. Number 11, I keep getting these numbers wrong. Number 11, BYU over Western Kentucky, 41-10. And that basically did it for last week. Some good games, some upsets, as we've seen throughout this year. Let's make our picks for week number 10 in college football, week number 3 in the Big Ten. A couple games already gone final. Nothing really of note. Kent State beat Eastern Michigan, Western Michigan over Akron, Buffalo over Northern Illinois, Central Michigan over Ohio, Miami over Ball State, Toledo over Bowling Green. So the MAC really trying to solidify their spot on your television set midweek. And hey, kudos to them if they can come back after they originally canceled the season and actually do that. Nevada beat Utah State. Colorado State beat Wyoming. Air Force Army has been postponed, but there are a lot of other games going on this weekend. SMU and Temple. I could go with SMU. They're 6-1 on the season. Arizona State and USC, first Pac-12 game of the year. I will go with Arizona State in the upset. West Virginia, Texas. I will like Texas there. Liberty, they're in the rankings now, 6-0. I'm going to take Virginia Tech at home, though. That should be a fun one, though. Kind of an underrated matchup. an unranked mid-major versus or a non-FBS, other FBS, I guess non-Power 5 team, taking on a Power 5 team on the road. So that should be a fun one. USF, that's South Florida and Memphis. I like Memphis in that one. Memphis is at home. Duke and North Carolina. I got North Carolina. Let's see. Tulsa Navy. That game was also postponed due to COVID. UMass and Marshall. I got to go Marshall. Number 8, Florida. And number 5, Georgia. That should be a fun one down in Athens. I will take the Bulldogs of Athens, Georgia. How about Houston and number 6, Cincinnati? I will take the Bearcats. Kansas taking on number 19, Oklahoma. Oklahoma easily in that one. Vanderbilt and Mississippi State, I will go Mississippi State. Texas Tech and TCU, I'll go with the Red Raiders. Purdue, Wisconsin, that game was canceled. UTSA postponed their game against Rice. Charlotte and Middle Tennessee, that game also postponed. Arizona and Utah canceled. I don't want to go into another rant because I want to wrap this thing up. But Utah and Arizona was canceled due to, if I'm reading the article correctly, one positive case. One. As bad as the Big Ten has handled things, and they still, I think, this 21-day thing, as we get more and more information on myocarditis and COVID, I think the 21-day rule is ridiculous. I think the 5% rule is kind of ridiculous. This is ridiculous. Arizona and Utah being postponed. That is absolutely ridiculous. And every party involved basically said they were great. They were cool with the idea. In other words, they don't really care to play football down there. I mean, they said it was due to contact tracing. Aren't they using the same antigen testing that the Big Ten is using? And isn't that antigen testing ideally supposed to basically negate any need for contact tracing? I don't get what's going on down there in the Pac-12. I don't get it. Number 14, Oklahoma State at Kansas State. I will go with the Cowboys there in a close one. Pittsburgh and Florida State, I like the Seminoles. Florida International, UTEP, that game was canceled. Number 7, Texas A&M and South Carolina, I'll go with the Aggies. Baylor at number 17, Iowa State, I like the Cyclones. UCLA and Colorado, I will go with the Colorado Bison or Buffalo, whatever they are. Number 1, Clemson at number 4, Notre Dame. Should be a great top 4 matchup. But without Trevor Lawrence, the Clemson Tigers, without their star quarterback, I will go with Notre Dame. That game, 6:30 p.m. And how about NBC getting probably the best game of the week? Of course, they usually cover Notre Dame home games, but it's been a while since we've seen a team this highly ranked playing at Clemson. I mean, typically Notre Dame's not playing in the ACC, so that'll be a fun one, 6:30 p.m. Central Time on NBC. Stanford at number 12, Oregon, I'll go with the Ducks. Tennessee and Arkansas, I've got the Razorbacks. South Carolina and number 15, Coastal Carolina, I've got Coastal Carolina there. Louisville, Virginia was postponed. Washington State, Oregon State, I'll go with Oregon State. Washington, Cal was also canceled. There you go, Pac-12. New Mexico and Hawaii, I've got Hawaii in the late game. And boy, I'd love to be in Hawaii right now as things start to get cold here in the States and we can't go to Iowa games. Due to COVID. So, anyways, let's switch over to the Big Ten Conference specifically, which will lead us into our discussion on Iowa and Michigan State, our keys to the game, and our predictions for the game. First of all, top 25 showdown, number 23, Michigan at number 13, Indiana. This one is a really hard read for me. I think people maybe overvalued what Indiana did against Penn State week one. It was week one, and I think there were a lot of kind of odd results, several upsets in the Big Ten, and I think don't think that really should come as a surprise to anybody. The game last week for Michigan was obviously a surprise. I don't know how much to make of their win over Minnesota after seeing Minnesota just fall apart against Maryland. I mean, I'm going to go with Indiana simply because they're at home. I can't imagine Michigan being 1-2 and Indiana being 3-0 in the Big Ten. And two of those wins are Michigan and Penn State. I mean, but I'm going to go Indiana. That game will be at 11 a.m. Central Time on FS1. Nebraska and Northwestern. Definitely rooting for the Huskers, but I've got to go Northwestern that game, 11 a.m. Big Ten Network. Maryland taking on Penn State, 2:30 p.m. Big Ten Network. I've got to think Penn State will get off the schneid and take care of business here at home. Minnesota and Illinois, both these teams are desperate for a victory, 2:30 p.m. on Big Ten Network. Again, I'm going to go Minnesota, but boy, if they lose this week, and they're 0-3 heading into that Iowa game, and Iowa's 0-3. I mean, this could turn into a really, really – it's already a weird season, but it could turn into a really – really just chaotic season if that were to occur. But I will go with Minnesota. We mentioned Purdue, number 10 Wisconsin. That game postponed – or excuse me, canceled. There's no time for postponements in the Big Ten this year. Rutgers at Ohio State, 6:30 p.m. on BTN. This is going to be a game where if Rutgers wins, this will be the greatest upset in the history of sports. I mean, seriously. This game will be at 6:30 p.m. on BTN, and yes, I'm taking Ohio State. They're favored by 39 by Vegas. Don't bet on a bad team. That's what I've always heard from odds makers in Vegas, but boy, how do you... And they'll probably cover it. They'll probably cover the 39-point line. The over-under there is... We have the over-under. Over-under for Ohio State Rutgers. Maybe we don't have that. Over-under. No, we don't have an over-under. Okay, no over-under for that game that I can see. I'm sure it's out there somewhere, so if you see it and you're interested in it, go ahead and comment on our post, but I don't see it on here. I was going to say, whatever the over-under is, you basically have to hope that Ohio State scores over it, because I don't know how Rutgers is going to get on the scoreboard. But, you know, Rutgers looked better against Michigan State. I don't know. Ohio State's really good. I think we all know that. Let's talk about Iowa and Michigan State a little bit more. Rocky Lombardi played well last week. Can he be the guy moving forward for Michigan State? I think he can. I think the biggest concern out of Spartan fans is a letdown after a victory. I don't think any of the fan base, and I don't even know if the players really expected that. I don't know what Mel Tucker really has going up there. I know Mel Tucker has talked about how he's modeled a lot of his game after Barry Alvarez, and of course, in essence, Hayden Fry and Iowa, or his coaching style, I should say. ESPN's FPI has Iowa 76.6% chance of winning. That's high. You know, Rocky Lombardi has played better than Spencer Petras this year. They're not really running the football very much or very well, but they are throwing the ball down the field well, and that's going to be the biggest storyline here. The over-under here is 46.5. I mean, I don't know how you can argue with that based on Iowa's first two games. The money line, let's see, plus 200, Michigan State. The spread, Iowa, 6.5. That seems high. Maybe I'm just being negative. That just seems high to me. It's supposed to be a nice day, if that's any recompense. 69 degrees at Kinnick, but of course no fans. It's what we've got with COVID. 69 degrees, partly cloudy, and the wind is supposed to be a lot less of a factor than it was last week, which, again, goes back to why Iowa didn't run the football more. I know Northwestern is their defense is apparently designed to stop the run. Well, if you're good enough, you'll beat them at their own game, right? I mean, I know you take what the defense gives you, but at some point you have to play your style of football. And you know, I know they did kind of downplayed the effects of the wind, but to me, you got to play with the conditions. So, anyways, let's move on. So, I don't know what to expect this game. I think the key here for Iowa, the key moving forward this season, is quarterback play. I don't think the defense has been perfect. I think we know it hasn't been perfect. I'm sure there have been mistakes on the line. I know Coy Cronk didn't play well. We'll see if he's the starter this weekend. I would think he would be, but boy, he did not look good on Saturday. I would think he'd get that figured out. I think Mark Kallenberger is a capable fill-in there at right tackle, so we'll see what happens with Kronk. I just think the key is quarterback play. If Petras throws three picks, they're going to lose. I mean, I don't think I'm, again, I don't really think I'm stating anything new to anybody listening, but they've got to get better quarterback play. They've got to be able to hit the deep ball a little bit better. I think that would be really nice to see if they can hit the deep ball a couple times, especially without Amir Smith-Marset, and you know, I you know Michigan State's going to be trying to stop the run like Northwestern because they're going to see what happened last week when Northwestern did that and Iowa just abandoned the run. I don't see that happening. I can't see Iowa throwing the ball 50 times. I can't see them throwing the ball 40 times. So Iowa's going to have to create space up front, but that's when I think play action is going to become a major factor. And we saw Michigan State turn the ball over week one, but I'm still going to say it's going to be quarterback play that makes a difference in this game. Who outperforms who? Right now, I'd have to give the advantage to Rocky Lombardi based on the first two games. But, I'm going to pick Iowa. I am going to pick Iowa. This was a week ago, I would have said this was the most winnable game on Iowa's schedule, more winnable than Illinois. I certainly don't believe that now. I think Illinois is the most winnable game on the schedule based on what I've seen. But I will go with Iowa here, and I'm going to go Iowa 24, Michigan State 20. I still don't think Iowa completely figures out the offense, especially without their star wide receiver. I hope they do. I hope they explode for 40. I have a hard time seeing that happen right now based on what we've seen these first two games. And I'll be very happy if I'm wrong, folks. So don't hold it against me. I'm going to be sitting here cheering right with you guys, and hopefully they can create some offense, create some space down the field, and run the ball this Saturday. So, again, Iowa, Michigan State this Saturday, tomorrow. We're recording this on Friday night. 11 a.m. is the kickoff time on ESPN inside Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City, Iowa. That will do it for week 134 of Brada's Branded Thoughts. We appreciate the listens. Remember, as we said during our commercial break, we've got a Twitter page that we've recently launched. We've got a revitalized and updated Facebook page. We're going to try to start promoting that a little bit more for the podcast. And we've had a beautiful new logo for our platform, you should say, our section of our website, which, of course, is sponsored by StoryCounty.news. But our Facebook page, Twitter page, go give them a follow, give them a like, and we'll continue to pump out podcasts and maybe even some other content along the way. So again, thank you for joining us. Week 134, we'll see you back for week 135, Iowa, Michigan State tomorrow on ESPN at 11 a.m. Iowa trying to improve to 1-2 on the season with a win over Sparty. We'll talk to you next week. Go Hawks.